Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, fresh off of Snow Valley Basketball School, fresh off of family vacation to, I believe, the gateway city of St. Louis, right, Coach?
Yes, that's correct. We run down to St. Louis for a few days, yep.
Yeah, it is. Matt Thomas, the new head boys basketball coach at Lewis County Highland. What's the proper name? Is it Lewis County or is it Highland, Coach?
Well, Highland is the high school, name of the high school, but yep. the district is Lewis County.
Okay.
The way they consider it, yep.
Okay, so for simplicity's sake, we're just going to call it Highland for today.
That's what everybody calls us, yeah.
All right, so, and we've just got all that covered already. Coach Thomas from Highland High School in Missouri, excited to have him on. Excited to once again say that our founding sponsor is Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coaches, if you or your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you are listening, whatever medium you are on or platform, Spotify, iTunes, whatever other stuff is out there. First of all, subscribe. Second of all, give us a 5-star review. Third of all, write us a nice review because we move up in the rankings when people do that stuff. So please, please do that. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough with the unfun stuff. Now let's get to the fun stuff. Coach Thomas, it's a Saturday morning. We're both somewhat kind of a little bit to a degree dreading going back to school here in the next few days here, but appreciate you coming on this morning.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, we're closing in on that time, aren't we? It just summer flies by anymore. It's unbelievable.
Yes. I have a new appreciation, you know, especially this summer. I was really in the mental space to, I want to maximize these 90-ish days or 80, you know, 85 days of just doing a bunch of stuff that I wanted to do, because for pretty much almost my entire adult life, my summer was dictated by the basketball schedule. And so yeah. I think probably more than ever, it's harder for me to turn back over my free time to that bell in the ceiling that's going to dominate our lives for the next 9 or 10 months here in a week and a half or so.
Yeah, I've always heard people who retire, you know, talk to people who retire. What's the thing you don't miss? You know, they're like just being ruled by that bell.
Yeah.
every whatever, 45, 50, 80 minutes, whatever it is, like, just ruled by that bell.
Yes.
So just by that, you know, that's always part of the summer, that you just do what you want.
Yeah.
When you want to tell my wife, I'll get it done.
Yes. My wife, she works in the private sector, and I'm always just amazed that, you know, you get more than 22 minutes to eat lunch. What do you do with all that time? I mean, how do you do this? You know, so enough about education per se. Let's dive into it. Coach Thomas, longtime follower, and we got to meet this is the first time we really got to chat at Snow Valley. Couple of weeks ago, my calves and lower body have finally fully recovered from running around Wartburg for a few days, and just excited to have you on the pod. Let's just dive into it. Let's dive into it the same way that we do with most of our guests. Just tell us, Matt, about your basketball journey, your basketball background. Let's keep the Rick Majerus stories to a minimum here. This morning, that's an inside joke between us, and nobody else gets it, but that's okay. I don't care. So, Coach, tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and how you ended up at Highland High School.
Yeah, this will be year 28, I guess, teaching and coaching for me. I played a little bit of college ball, or tried to anyhow. I always tell people I didn't play. I dressed and practiced a lot.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it started. I guess is where I kind of started to go, you know what, maybe I want to coach a little bit. And so then I got into coaching. I said, it's year 28. Bring this back up. I've been an assistant for the last 4 years. I went and worked with a friend of mine. My son started playing for us. I don't know if you ever had a kid play for you, but he started playing for me as a freshman. And it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And we came home after game one night, and my wife looks at me. She goes, "This ain't working." And he was a freshman. He was a freshman starter. We were a small school. He was my starting point guard. She goes, "This isn't working. Like, you're gonna, something has to change." So I had a buddy of mine whose assistant job came open, and we thought, "Was well, that's probably a pretty good move for us." So ended up there for 4 years as an assistant with him. And now I'm back up here in Northeast Missouri, a lot closer to mom and dad. My parents are getting older, and so it's pretty soon. We don't have to take care of them yet, but we're getting to that point, where you got to kind of start taking care of your parents. So that's kind of what brought us back this direction. We've been here for 7 years. In a neighboring district down the road, and we've been here and in the same conference for 7 years. So coming back where we know a lot of people and a lot of roots back here.
Our newest category to the podcast, the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Matt, when is or when was the first time that you can kind of remember getting out something to write with and putting together those pesky X's and O's that fascinate all of us?
Actually, I took a class in college, a theory of basketball. And we had that was, you had to take your general whatever. And so our women's coach, Gary Smith, at William Penn, he taught that class. And so one of the assignments was you had to come up with a drill book, you had to come up with, bounce play, a play for a shooter, whatever it was. And that was part of your assignment. And so then you had to go demonstrate it on the floor. So whatever the drill was, we'd go down to the gym and you had to walk through a drill and teach the drill. That was all part of it. So that's kind of where I guess I started, started thinking about it and started writing stuff down and taking notes. And kind of guess from that day forward, it's been note taking and writing a lot of stuff down and compiling stuff, I guess. My wife gets mad at how much stuff I have. I don't know about you, but like the amount of notes that I write and the folders that I have from this guy and this guy and this guy and the amount of stuff I got on zip drives now, just just there's too much stuff, but I've got it, so.
Yeah, all of my stuff is in my classroom, so my wife really doesn't have any idea how much there is, but at some point she will discover that. And now she has Tupperware, I have basketball stuff, so I like any good marriage, we try to equal it out, so. That basketball theory class, or theory of basketball class, that sounds pretty cool. What are some other things that you took from that class?
It was a fun class, and it was the first time that I started to hear about other coaches. I didn't know, you don't know what you don't know, right? So I didn't know there was stuff out there. It was the first time I got introduced to like Don Meyer. And I'm like, wait a minute, didn't he just make videos? People put stuff out there on basketball videos. Now, VHS at the time, right?
Yeah, yes, very much VHS at the time.
Yes, and so so I got introduced to Don Meyer and some different guys like that. And so all of that was my first experience with a lot of that stuff. Was that class under Gary and just different stuff? And I'd ask him questions, and there probably were 10 people in there. I don't remember now, but I'd ask him just a lot of questions about this and that. Well, what about this? It was one of the first times that I'd heard anybody talk about forced baselines defensively. Forced baseline, and Don Meyer, we're watching a defensive video, of Don Meyer forcing baseline. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, I've, my entire life, my high school, my college career was always never give up baseline. Like, what are we doing here? And so we spent, Gary spent the rest of the class talking about, different defensive styles and this and that. So, just I it was a class where I just it I guess it was it piqued the interest of different stuff, of there's more stuff out there than just what I've learned and what I've been taught.
Yeah.
you know, myself through high school and college. So it was a good class. I enjoyed it. I liked Gary. Gary was a great guy. And so that was, we developed a good relationship there and through the class. And I ended up helping him for a year. When I was done, I got done playing, I still had a little bit of a few classes to take to finish up. So I ended up being his student assistant for a year. So it was good stuff. Like I said, it just that was the time that it kind of piqued my interest of, yeah, maybe I want to do this.
Well, you brought up Coach Meyer, another guy that you've put some stuff out there is a mutual acquaintance of ours, Jim Boone. Let's dive down the rabbit hole with these. I think I paid for a couple of Coach Meyer's mortgages in ordering his stuff. So let's talk about the influence of Coach Meyer on you, your career. I mean, my career, and this is a rabbit hole that I don't know how long it's going to take us to dig out of, but let's go down here.
Right. Yeah. All those, Donnie's put out all those old videos.
Mm-hmm.
All the video. He had a video for everything. It didn't matter, how to run a timeout, how to give a halftime speech, whatever it was. Like, it just seemed like there was a video for everything. And I'm like you, I owned, I don't know how many of those things I own now.
Yeah.
But I bought a bunch of them. And he used to put out a newsletter. I don't know if you ever got that newsletter.
I did not get the newsletter. Yeah.
It was an email. It was like before everybody started doing it. It'd come out and it'd have, three or four different quotes or, here's something to try with your program. Here's a drill, whatever. And it was, somewhere I've got a folder. I know all my stuff. Like, I would print those out.
Mm-hmm.
I print all those emails out. I've got them somewhere, in amongst all my stuff. Just a folder, one of those manila folders labeled Don Meyer.
Yeah.
And it was stuff that I had put in there and that I keep in there. And every now and then I'll go back to, he made a quote. But he always went, did you ever go to one of his clinics?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And he always had all those handouts.
Yep.
How to be a great teammate and 10 ways to get to the state championship and whatever. So I've got a whole, like I said, I got all those packed in there and what was it? Wolf pack, something about the wolf pack and the wolf being the strong.
Yeah.
I remember how that thing went, but he always had it on when he was at Northern State there and he had it on the poster. So,
yeah.
So those were always, always took those things and I guess at the time you didn't know it or I didn't know it anyhow. He was building culture.
Yes.
And, with all that stuff.
That's what he was saying. That's just the word. That's now the word that we summarize.
That's a hot topic. Yeah. And that's what he was doing. And I didn't, at the time as a young coach and whatever, I didn't know that's what he was doing. And then I would take that stuff and try and use some of that stuff and change wording or whatever with our guys. So I guess we were building culture at the time and nobody really ever. It's not what you. That was not the buzzword of the day. You didn't do it. So I enjoy it. Like I said, I probably heard Don talk. I don't know, four, five, six different times.
Yeah,
and some clinic stuff, and there was always something. It didn't matter. You always took something away from the guy. Whatever it was, a thing, a drill, or whatever it was. And actually, when we moved to Palmyra, I knew a guy that had him come into a clinic in Iowa. So I called him. I was trying to raise money for our program. Hey, how'd you get Don Meyer to come? Oh, here's his phone number calling. Okay. So, I call this phone number and Donnie answers, hey, Coach Meyer, my name is Matt Paulus. I live in Missouri. Like, would you come to a clinic? Yeah, what day? it was this conversation. Okay, what time do you want to start? Okay, great. All right, see you then. And, call me a couple days before. All right, great.
Yeah.
And so he called, we set everything up and he's going to come. And so he calls me and he's driving from like Omaha or something like that. He had a wedding. And so he's going to come. He's going to show up. He said, I'll be there at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Great. We're going to start at 8, whatever. Great. So I, of course I've never met him, just sent a couple clinics, And so I get there, like 6:40, 6:45 on a Saturday morning, make sure I got the doors open. He's sitting outside. He's waiting for me. I get in my truck and he goes, "You're late." He says to me, "You're late."
That's great.
20 minutes. It's still 20 minutes. Like, you're not supposed to be here for another 20 minutes. That's what I had time.
Yeah.
Like, so that was great. That was him, you know, and the dry humor, you know, if you watch the SP.
Oh, sure.
He got his SP, you know, the dry humor in it, and it's just funny stuff. So.
Yeah. I remember going up to his coach's academy when he was at Northern, and John Burt, who's my longtime coworker, he's the one that kind of got it all set up. And so I just kind of went along for the ride, but it took me, it's like a 36-hour deal. You stay overnight, you do all this stuff, and it took me about 24 hours to get up enough nerve to go talk to him. And I'm like, coach, how do you, I'm probably 32 years old, but my voice is cracking like I'm 15 again, how do you, and I forget, I don't even remember what question I asked him. And, we ended up talking for a few minutes, and, I kind of the gateway I used was talking about Coach Nacky, the guy I worked for him at Briarcliff for a year and knew Coach for a long time, and he knew him. And I when I got done with my first conversation with him, I felt like Will Ferrell from Old School, where he's like, "What happened? I blacked out. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what happened."
Yeah.
So that's Coach Meyer. That's who he was. That's a great story. You're late, 20 minutes early. So,
That's what I learned. Yeah, I learned pretty quick. Okay, well, that's not it.
So. a guy that's now moved into somewhere near your neighborhood, Coach Boone, who's a guy you've reposted a lot. Got to know Coach a little bit over the last few years. Just what do you like about Coach Boone?
So Twitter opened up a whole new world. A whole new basketball world. When it started. So. Back in, I can't tell you what year it was now, 9, 10, 11, somewhere in there, when I first, hey, Twitter, okay, let's see what this thing's about. And he was on there, find him somewhere, and you start following stuff and start looking him up and all this. Well, he was running Pathline stuff at the time, which I had started running a little bit earlier. And so, just through Twitter a couple times, like, hey, Coach, asked him a question about this or that. And then he actually came, him and his son Jimmy came to Snow Valley. They worked Snow Valley a couple of years.
Okay.
Up there in Iowa. So got to know him, got to know him even better then. And then, just over the course of the year, would run into him tomorrow at the clinic. But we went down one day, we went down, we spent like a whole Saturday with him. We just talked basketball.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, it didn't matter, offense, defense. Practice, we threw stuff up and he shared whatever and was great. So and then he just got the job over here in Missouri Valley not too long ago, whatever it was now. So he'll be over here and be in the Heart of America and working over here. So good to have him in the state of Missouri, kinda call him, throw stuff off of him, run over, watch him practice. So it'd be good.
And accomplished griller as well.
Yes. I think we may talk more about barbecue and smoking than we do basketball, when we talk. So yeah, he's always got something, doesn't he? Always
does.
I'm always like, I'll show it to my wife. I'll be like, hey, why don't you get this ready? I don't know where he got this, but why don't you prep this up and I'll smoke it for you. We never get it done. It's just like, we run out of time or whatever. So
yeah.
But yeah, I love his smoking stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barbecue. So yeah.
Speaking of your family, proud dad moment, got to know your daughter, Natalie, at Snow Valley. Great, great young lady. A lot of fun to be around. Assistant coach, graduate assistant at Ashland University, a very accomplished Division II school out in Ohio. What was that process like of watching her? What has the process been like of watching her getting into the coaching profession and just kind of watching her beginning her journey much in the same way that you did? We're just saying our seasoned and experienced state. It was a while ago.
Yeah. Right. She's somewhere in college. She started working Snow Valley in Missouri while she was still playing. And she worked the girls camp down here. And she said one day to me, she goes, "Dad, I think I want to coach." I'm like, "No, you don't." No, you don't. No. Yeah, Dad, I think I do. So we kind of, you know, went back and forth for a few months or whatever. And she's like, "Dad, I really think I want to coach." I said, "Well, then stay at the college level." Like, there's just sometimes you've been in high school.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's too political. It's too much. We've moved quite a bit from stuff. Go the college route. I always say that's one thing I wish I would have done. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to chase a grad assistant or something, because you always come back and teach. Yep. Right. Like it's harder to go uphill than it is to go back downhill and in that situation. And so I've always said, like, go chase as long as you can. If you don't like it, hey, you can always come back. You know, it's again, you're wrapped in education. Education's changed so much. You can get a degree online now.
Yeah.
Teaching, you know, you and I had to go through 9 weeks of student teaching.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And now you can just go get a degree online and add whatever you have. And I said, so you can always do that if you wanted to. So, yeah. So she thought, okay. So she started, she graduated, she played 4 years, she graduated. And, just kind of, she said when she started out to, you know, okay. And I told her, I said, you need to sit down and come up with like a list of things you want. You know, what kind of a degree do you want? Who you want to work for, all that stuff. So she sat down and she said, and this is way smarter than I would have ever thought about. She said, "I want to go work for a woman." She said, I've never, a female coach. She said, I've never played for one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she said, it's always been you. It was my high school coach. It was a male. My college coach was a male. Never worked for a female. I need to know how to balance a family, a husband, kids, and also coach. And I'm like, well, that's pretty smart, because I would have never thought
that's quite mature right there. Yes,
there's no way I would have ever thought that. Jobs, okay, great. Yeah, college coach, okay, great. So she sat down and started looking out schools with female head coaches. And that's kind of where she started. And then she narrowed it down, and she talked to some different people about, well, do I want to do D1? Do I want to do D2? Do I want to do NAIA? And she talked to, I don't even remember who it was now. It was a Division I coach. She talked to her. She said, listen, she said, my graduate assistant coaches can't do a whole lot. She's like, they're kind of glorified pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, like, if that's not what you want, go D2. You're going to be way hands-on, D2, NAIA. You're gonna be hands on. So that narrowed her list even more.
Mm-hmm.
She probably had, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 different schools. So she just sent out emails and like, "Hey, I'm gonna graduate and I would like to coach. I'm looking for a GA spot. You know, are you gonna have one open?" And so a few people reached back. Ashland was one of them. When it ended up, you know, in this profession, it's not what you know; it's who you know.
Exactly. Yep.
And so it ended up that the men's coach at William Woods knew the assistant coach at Ashland. And so then that, you know, that became a conversation with them. And there you go. She ends up, you know, getting an interview with them and went out and spent a weekend with them at the Final Four, and they offered the job and she took it. So that was kind of her route and how she did it. So.
Yeah. And she's obviously very much vested into it. And, you know, it's just got to be a nice, proud dad moment.
It is. And like I said, just, you know, I guess for me, maturity and for her to go, "Hey, I'm going to go to Ohio where I'm 10 hours away, you know, from mom and dad. And I wanted to do this." And so for her to go out there and to do that, and do it on her own. I don't know if I was mature enough to do that at her age or not. I probably wasn't. It'd been a disaster, I'm sure. So for her to go do that and for them to, you know, trust her to do stuff, as a grad assistant, I'm not sure I even trust, that I would trust somebody that age to, you know, line up hotels and line up transportation and all that, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I'm not sure I could do that, but they do. They trust her, and so she jumps in and does a lot of that stuff. And you know how it is, it does all the stuff that the the others don't want to do sometimes. That's just the way it works. So
yeah, it rolls downhill.
Yeah, and it, you know, but she's still involved in a lot of stuff. But like I told her, I said that the amount of experience that it gives you different avenues. You know, she writes a newsletter to all their alumni or their donors or whoever it is. She puts together a newsletter. So I said, just, you know, all that experience you're getting, you know, you can write down. That's when your resume is the next place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you go into somewhere and they're like, oh, a newsletter. Mm-hmm. You know, and now you can start one, but then you can turn it over to the GA.
Yeah.
At some point, go, hey, here's what we want, you know, and you know what you're doing and know what's going on. So yeah, just, like I said, just, you know, it's different, you know, when your kid goes into it and they're doing it. So, definitely proud of her.
Mm-hmm. It's early August, folks, and you know what that means. It means it is time to go back to school. And just like you, I'm not terribly excited about it either. But I am excited about the start of the 2025 Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics. Coaches, if you are within a 30-mile radius of Omaha, there's no reason why you shouldn't sign up for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinic. We've got a great lineup of coaches this fall. It is very much worth your while. Let's go through the lineup here. We've got 4 Wednesday nights, 2 in September, 2 in October, September 17th and 24th, October the 1st, and October the 8th. We've got Division I assistant coaches. We've got coaches in waiting. We've got great high school coaches. Let's run through it here. September 17th, Brian Cooley, the University of Minnesota's men's assistant. He is going to do both sessions. He's coming down from Minneapolis, and he is going to give us a bunch of really, really good stuff there. On September 24th, we're going to have 2 speakers. My lifelong friend, Dick Jungers, the head girls basketball coach at Newell Fonda High School in Iowa. Wonder how he got on the docket. But yes, reached out to Dick. He is going to come down September 24th. He's going to do the first hour. And then Alan Huss, the associate head coach at Creighton University, essentially Coach Mack's coach in waiting, highly successful coach at High Point in North Carolina. He's coming back here to Omaha. He is going to be our second speaker that evening. On October the 1st, we've got Mark Krueger, my good friend Krugs. You've heard Krugs on the podcast numerous times. He is going to be speaking, as well as Nate Lenzer, the assistant assistant coach at Nebraska with the men's program. Coach Lenzer, a great, great basketball mind. I've known Coach Lenzer for a few years. He's going to do a bang-up job on October the 1st. And then October the 8th, we are going to have Jamie Carey, the new Omaha women's head coach. She is going to do both sessions that evening. She's going to use her staff as well. Those first 3 nights, September 17th, September 24th, and October the 1st, those are going to take place at Legends Sports Bar, located at 6920 Pacific Street here in Omaha. On October the 8th, we are going to go on the court at Brownell Talbot here in Omaha. The doors open every week at 6 o'clock. There's going to be beverages. There's going to be chicken wings. That goes from 6 to 7. And then the speakers start at 7 o'clock. We're going to have door prizes, a lot of really, really good stuff. Here's the deal. If you register before September the 1st, $75 per coach on your staff. So you divide that. That's less than $10 an hour for your coaches to come in and get great, great knowledge and have the opportunity to network with coaches in the area. After September the 1st, it's going to jump up to $90. So if you want to sign up 4 of your coaches, or let's say yourself and 3 of your coaches, that's a $60 savings by getting signed up by September the 1st. If you are interested in registering, send the registration to Ralston High School. Attention, Mr. Tom Krehbiel, K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L, 8969 Park Avenue, or I'm sorry, Park Drive, Ralston, Nebraska, 68127. Make your checks payable to MBCA. Coaches in the Omaha area, again, 30-mile radius. There's no reason not to sign up for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association 2025 Coaches Clinics. Let's talk about your job. Let's talk about the new gig. Taking over a situation where it was struggle last year on the floor. Not a lot of success. What's been the plan here? What if you knew obviously when you interviewed that this was a situation where there hadn't been a lot of success the last couple of years. So what have you been trying to do this summer to try to kind of get things kickstarted and trying to move it back in the right direction, at least on the floor?
Yeah, well, so when there's Island has some really, really good history, basketball history. You know, they've had some kids come out of here, go on, play D1. There's always been a history, where it's, they love basketball. They love playing basketball. And so I knew the record, we knew the assistant or the girls coach. We've known her for years. And so she had the jobs. When the job came home, she called my wife. She's like, "Hey, tell your husband the job's open if he's got any interest in it." So we kind of started there. Like I said, I started looking into it. And so I called some guys around the area. What do you think? And every one of them, like, there's talent there. It's just got to be, you know, it's got to be kind of bridled together. It's pretty undisciplined and whatever. So, but there's talent there. There's been talent to win. You know, when I was in the conference, they won back-to-back conference titles. They went to the Final Four. I forget now what the banner says. If they went Final Four in back-to-back years or just 1 year and missed, lost in the quarterfinals the year before. I don't remember now what it was, but so there's always been talent. So that was a draw for me. But I think the one thing we came in, what everybody kept telling me, they're not disciplined. You know, back to Don Meyer, they don't show up on time. They're not, you know, they may roll in late to practice. They kind of do whatever they want. So that was the first thing we did. We just came in and I said, here's our non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. Like, here, practice non-negotiables, you know, so we get 20 days in the summer here. So I think we used probably 12 of those, something like that, by the time I was driving back and forth. But we came in and we just said, here are practice non-negotiables. And we said that from day one. Number one was attendance. It's like, if you're not here, you're not playing. It's just like a job,
yeah.
Marty. You don't show up, you don't get paid. And so that was kind of where we started. And so we played a couple of games. And there were a couple of kids, I'm like, no, you can't play. Well, why not? Because you weren't here. You didn't practice with them. Like, no, this is not the way this works. And so they got it. So I think we started there with just non-negotiables. You got to show up. You got to be early. You know, Don Meyer, you bet. Whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
10 minutes early is 5 minutes late. So you better be on the floor. You need to have your shoes on. You need to be dressed 10 minutes before. Here's a pre-practice, you know, shooting routine that I want you to go through. I think we started there and a lot of it started with discipline. And then I think the other thing we did was we had a word called Mudita, some word, you know, from another culture, whatever. But it's a joy for others. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that they didn't, you know how it is when you take over stuff or even whatever. It's human nature. You become extremely selfish with it. And so one thing we made them do was we made them cheer for each other and, you know, started cheering for each other and root for each other and in whatever we did and, you know, drills and whatever. So I think those are just some of the things we did trying to change culture again, trying to change the culture of what they were doing and why they were here. And then effort. I think that was once we started practicing, mm-hmm. I told them, I said, there's another effort level that I expect that you've never been expected to play at. You know, so when your lungs are burning and you think that I'm being unfair, like, we're not even close yet.
Yeah.
There's another level of effort to it that we've got to get to. So so I think those are some of the things that we started to do and turn around. And we played a few games over summer. We didn't play a lot. Just we needed to practice more than we needed to do anything. And you can see us get better, you know, as we went on and everything went on. And we'd practice five or six times. We'd go play three games. We'd practice, you know, another couple, three times. We'd go play some games. And so by the end of the summer, by the time we were done, you could see that stuff that we were trying to do was starting to work. That's the one thing that I wanted them to see. you can have success with what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And this discipline doesn't mean we're not having fun or those type of things. It's just, if you want to be successful on Friday night, here's what you want to do Monday through Thursday. And that leads to fun on Friday night, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's a life, you know, it's a life lesson.
It's a
discipline thing. If you can't discipline yourself to wake up in the morning, you go to your job, you're going to be without a job. Like, you're not going to get paid. And that's just, you know, that's a life skill, being early and just different stuff. But, you know, discipline, I always say discipline is the highest form of love. When you discipline somebody, you love them. So that's one thing I try to get them to understand, that, listen, I'm not here for, you know, I'm not here for personal gain or whatever. Like, I'm here for you guys. I want to make you guys better and try and make you guys a team and successful come along the way.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the things, you know, the last 4 years you've been an assistant coach, you stepped away from the head job. What are some things that you were able to learn the last 4 years that you hope to, you know, kind of apply to this situation?
Yeah, I think you always learn. And I told my wife this for a few years. I said, you know, I wouldn't mind going back and being an assistant, you know, for 2 or 3 years. Because once you become the head coach and you're in high school, I don't see other high school coaches practice. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, we can go to stuff. I don't see what they do day to day. We can, you know, I can go sit down, have a round table or whatever it is, and get, you know, I can get this drill or that drill, and but you just never see like day to day stuff of it. And I always told her, like, I think it would make me a better coach. So, I think, you know, you always learn new ways to, new drills, new ways to run a practice, something different to do in practice, you know, that I do different than you do, or you do different than Joe does, or whatever it is. So I think just some of that stuff that I learned, that Chris is really good at, X's and O's stuff. I think one of the other things that spent a lot of time with was practice film.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that I had ever done a lot of, prior to the huddle camera.
Yep.
You know, you had to have a kid at practice, and that kid had to run the camera. And if they, you know, if you're trying to do transition or full court or whatever, it's like, well, again, that kid falls asleep, or he's looking on his phone and he misses it, then he missed part of it. And it just, you know, it just, sometimes it wasn't very good. And so, I think now, you know, with the invention of the huddle camera, being able to put that in your gym, and you got an app, and you click on it, and I want to run, you know, I want to film this next 20-minute segment of whatever defensive transition. I think that's a big thing now. That was something that I guess I never really did practice film. I never really used. I always heard college coaches.
Yeah.
You know, they're always like, oh man, we film practice, and we stat all our practices, and, well, you got 5 assistants and 8 grad assistants, and, you know, like that.
Yeah.
I've got myself and my assistant coach. I may or may not have a student manager. Like, that's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's, so I guess that huddle camera is kind of a game changer in my mind, you know, where you can film parts of practice, and now it doesn't take the next day. We can go in right after practice.
Yeah.
And go, okay, let's sit down and watch this. It's 20 minutes. We're going to watch 5 minutes of it. You know, or you picked out, there were 2 or 3 different things in that you saw, like, okay, I'm going to show them this on, and you can go right to the locker room and pop it up, and there it is, and you can show them. So, I think that was a big thing that I learned, of just how to get better through film.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was a big thing that I took for granted. I knew it, but I took for granted, and just, you know, the time spent. But now with huddle, when they break stuff down, you know, you send all your stats in, they break it down, shoot, you can get it back, and you can click on every, whatever, 3-pointer made, right? And you can, okay, how did we make everyone? How do we give up, you know, 10 of them? How did we give them up? What was our defense rotation? You can go back, clip that, watch it. I think that was just a big game changer for that. It's made lives easier for coaches, made some better coaches, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a big thing. And I think probably one of the big things I learned, just the relationship with players and coaches. You know, you always know it's important, right?
Yeah.
I think in seeing in today's age, having my son gone through, my daughter, my oldest, and now the youngest coming up, I think that relationship part is probably bigger than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, kids just, when I played, probably when you played, like, I never talked to coach outside of practice. You know, he went home and he was at home and he didn't put anything on social media. It wasn't, I didn't call him. If I had to call him, I had to pick up the rotary dial, and one, three, it took me longer to call him than it did, to have a conversation with him. And so, I think those things, I think that's probably one of the biggest things over the last, 10 years, I guess, that maybe has changed. But that was something that I kind of, that was something I picked up a lot more on maybe as an assistant coach versus a head coach. When you got all the things going on as a head coach that you do, when's picture day and when's this going on and how do we schedule the gym? And it's probably something I picked up on more so as an assistant than I did as a head coach, of kind of the importance of that, between coaches also and between coach and player.
Yeah. Well, you talked about relationships and building relationships with players. You've also worked really hard. You're really involved with stuff outside of just your own program, your own silo, if you will. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Snow Valley. You're really involved with Midwest Showcase. You're a member of the Missouri Basketball Coaches Association board. How have all of those experiences kind of enhanced your coaching and helped make you a better coach?
Yeah, I think, I'll start Snow Valley first. I've been there, I don't even know how long it's been now, 20 some years. I think 03 or 04 is like the first year I worked. So Snow Valley helped shape, I guess, kind of the way I taught stuff and what you teach and maybe what's important and what's not important and learning from different guys. And it's just a great, Don says it all the time, it's one of the best coaching clinics you can have. Mm-hmm. And as far as sitting there, I got notes, my first 10 years, my gosh, I wrote everything down, whatever Tate Lock said or whatever, whoever it was said, Bill Van Gundy or whoever, it didn't matter. Like, I wrote it down and what did they say? And so I had all this stuff, but that probably shaped me more than anything as far as the coach and how to, coach the game, what to coach, not to coach, coaches association. I've been involved in it now. Five, six, somewhere in there, seven, maybe. I don't remember when that was. And so I got on the board. And so for me on that side of it, it was just, it's meeting and knowing the coaches in the state. I don't know how much get out in the state, but just knowing who guys are, hey, I need something in the Southeast. I can call, Marty Palm in the Southeast part of the state, go, hey, Marty, I need some game film from you. Because I have that relationship from the board. So for me, that's always been a big thing. Like, I got to know who people were.
Yeah.
Instead of just being in my own little kind of conference and world and section of the state, I found out who everybody in the state was,
Yeah.
And you find out a lot about a lot more people, build those relationships with other people, and then you see them have success. And, then I'll call them and go, hey, what'd you do this year? How did that work? Well, I saw you run this on film, or I saw you do this at the state tournament. What did you do? How do you do that? Tell me how that works. So that's been good. That's a big part of the coach association. Like I said, just the relationships there and talking to different people. So, those two things have been pretty big for us. Mm-hmm. For me,
coaching today is, let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about, but it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level, and you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level. It's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you gotta know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about. Zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development. Personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O's, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it for 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from a pen and a napkin. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound?
Okay.
John Wooden, quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. You know how this goes, Matt. I'm going to read you a quote. I'll give you a bit to kind of pontificate over it. And I think that's the way you use that word. I'm not sure. That's that Briarcliff education trying to bust through. So I'll throw the quote out, give you a second to think about it. And we'll just kind of buzz our way through it here. So, Coach Thomas, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day? From page 94 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, John Wooden quote of the day is, "There are no shortcuts. If you're working on finding a shortcut, the easy way, you're not working hard enough on the fundamentals. You may get away with it for a spell, but there is no substitute for the basics. And the first basic is good old-fashioned hard work."
That's pretty good. Effort. We call it effort. Mm-hmm. Hard work, effort, however, whatever phrase you want to use there. We use that with our guys a lot. If you don't get what I use this quote with our guys, you don't get what you want, you get what you earned. Mm-hmm. I always tell them, like, hey, I'd like to be a millionaire, but I've never worked to be a millionaire. I'm not going to get a hand it to me, So, that's why we always try to tell them, like, without the hard work, you're not going anywhere. It doesn't matter. Hard work's the entrance ticket to our program. So, there are no shortcuts. The work has to be done. I'm remodeling a house right now.
God bless you.
It's we moved and. It's been a mess. We tore everything out. But anyway, so you're putting everything back. So my background's been industrial tech. That was a shop teacher. That's been my background. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you use that with your guys. You start taking shortcuts on building the house, rewiring switches, redoing plumbing, and you start to take shortcuts, you're going to pay for it down the road somewhere. Whether it be something fails, electricity, electrical, whatever catches on fire. I don't know what it is, but the more shortcuts you take, the more problems you're going to have down the road. Does it look great up front? Absolutely. Is it going to last and be sustainable? No, probably not. And so in our, that reminds me just of the remodeling of the house and whatnot. Quit taking shortcuts and sometimes it requires more, in remodeling the house, not taking the shortcut requires more money potentially, to do it the right way, and on the basketball side of it, no shortcuts probably requires more time, more energy, more effort,
more discipline.
Yeah. And all that requires time and it requires something of you.
Yes.
Requires more than just showing up every day. So, that's a great quote. No, there are no shortcuts. Yep. That's a great quote.
And here I was feeling really good about hanging a bar, for some curtains in our new window, in our basement last night. And it felt really accomplished, and within 12 hours, you put my technical expertise to shame, Matt. So it's okay.
I apologize for that.
That compared to where I was when we got this house, I feel like Bob Vila, at that point. So
there you go. More Tim Taylor.
There we go. Let's dive in, Matt, at this time. Let's start really diving in on the basketball nerd stuff here. I threw this out to you. I have on my list, when I plan my practices, I have what I call my desert island drills. So here's the scenario. I'm stuck on a desert island with a basketball team, and the basketball gods have said you only get 5 drills that you get to run forever, for eternity. But here's you only get to pick 5, but you've got to develop your team. And what 5 would those be? And for me, I kind of start thinking at it as, this is such a great drill. Why aren't we running this drill more? So I literally put a category on my rough draft of my practice plan, desert island drills. We've got to run at least 1 or 2 desert island drills a day, because if I think that they're that good of a drill, we should be running these drills all the time. And you get lost in the shuffle of the season, blah, 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 all that fun stuff. Matt, here's my challenge to you. What are your 5 desert island drills that you would like to share with our listeners? And I'll just let you cook, and I'll try to interrupt as politely as possible if I deem it necessary for the good of the podcast. But, what are your 5 desert island drills, Coach Thomas?
Okay. I think number one, one of my favorite drills, I call it Husky. First time I ever saw the drill was at Snow Valley. I want to say it was Troy Ursland had run it. But it's a progressive transition, 2v1, 3v2, 4v3, right? And now everybody kind of starts to run. That was the first time I'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about that drill, and you think about a game of basketball, you're always playing at a disadvantage of some sort, right? I mean, that's offensively, you're trying to create a disadvantage. Yes, to keep, and keep the disadvantage. And so, defensively, you're always trying to fight against it, but you're always in that situation where it's, you got to help, and now it becomes a 4v3, it's a 5v4, whatever it is. So I think that drill is one of the best ones that we could do. Like, I love that drill when we do it right, and you start, because then you're working offense and you're working defense, right? Mm. You're defensively, you're trying to rotate and take away 4v3 and 2v1. You're trying to get a stop. You're trying to get them to make an extra pass, whatever it is. Well, offensively, you're trying to attack it, right? You're trying to attack a 2v1, and we'll put rules into it. Like 2v1, it's a 1 pass. When you get into the operating area, inside the 3, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the scoring zone.
Yeah, it's 1 pass. Like, it's got to go pass and get up. Well, then you're trying to stop that. You're trying to get out and run. Can you kick it ahead? Can you take an advantage of a kick ahead? So I think that drill is such a great drill. If you ever said, man, like, what's one drill you could only run ever one? I don't know. For me, that would just be the one. That's a great drill.
Okay. That's one.
Gosh.
Now here's the great thing about this desert island. You're not limited to one. I'm giving you five, Matt. So.
Okay. A lot of 3-on-3, 4v4 stuff. I love playing that stuff because you can put in different situations. Like we started using a clock this year. I don't know if you ever do that.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's almost like the FIBA, you know, it's like the FIBA 3-on-3 that we did it at Still Valley, you know, where it'll be a different 3-on-3, but we're playing still with a 12 seconds. So it's decision making. You got to make decisions. You got to learn how to make decisions quick. I don't know if that's like Chris Oliver stuff or kind of what it is, but we'll do a lot of 3-on-3, 4v4 stuff. You know, whatever it is, there's X closeouts, Close Help Live, those couple names that we use for them. And we do that. Shell, like we probably do Shell every day, but not as a typical Shell, pass, hold it. You know, we'll do that early season. We do that, you know, 2 minutes maybe, just so I can make sure everybody's jumping to the gap, make sure we're on the right side, all that stuff. But then we'll vary it. So we'll play 4-on-4, and it was play alive. So we're basically playing 4-on-4 live. So instead of, I just call it Shell. It's not, like I said, it's not your typical just jump from spot to spot, but we'll play it live. So one time we may kick it out. Okay. If the guy you're guarding, if I throw it to him, you have to touch the volleyball spike line before you can come back. Well, now all of a sudden we're back at a 4-on-3. We're having to rotate, talk, communicate, whatever it is. Sometimes I'll put guys in the corner. And the only time, you know, if they touch it, they have to drive it. So now your weak side has to help, and you've got to drop the baseline. You got to take stuff away. And that's the only thing you can do is drive it, you know. Yeah. So as soon as they catch it, they got to put it on the floor and they got to drive it. So we'll do that. Just like I said, just a variation of different stuff for it, for Shell stuff.
Two left.
You got to shoot. You know, you've always got to shoot. That was Hubie Brown. I heard him talk one time. He said, you got to have a 10 to 12 minute section of shooting somewhere in your practice. You know, so some sort of shooting. I'm big on just what shots do we get out of our offense? You know, so I'm a big screen guy, right? I want to screen and we're going to curl it, or we're just going to pop it out. You know, so we use the term one in, one out. You know, so if one guy goes out, one guy's got to go in. So you slip the screen, or if the cutter curls, then the screener pops, right? Like that. So we just do a ton of that stuff and try and rep that. As far as shooting stuff goes, you know, I used to do different stuff. You know how it is, and we still will to mix stuff up. Like we'll do some competitive stuff. You know, where it ends in a half court shot. Right. Like kids love that. You know, we don't get anything out of it, but it ends practice. Somebody hits half court shot, everybody goes crazy and whatnot. So I think that's some sort of shooting, however you do it. Let's see. That's what, four?
Yeah, that's four. Got one.
Gosh, let me think. Say you got to do some sort of, oh, I say skill development. I'm trying to think, like, you know, you ball handling stuff. Probably, I would say probably some sort of up and down. You know, you got to go up and down somehow, compete. We do what we call three trips. So we'll go down, back, down. And then you got a winner and a loser of that three trips. You got to play hard in that three trips. You got a winner or loser. Somebody goes out. So I'd say probably three trips. That one, it because you run enough, now you can stop, reset. Okay, Joey, you didn't rotate, whatever it was. Your offense was, you know, you shot one pass first side of the floor, whatever. You can break that down. I'd say probably that one. We do that one quite a bit, especially kind of into practice. Kind of, yeah. where it's, and now we can work on situations with it at the same time. So we may start up a free throw. We might start out of a baseline, you know, balls out of baseline, out of bounds. And so we'll start the possession from there. We can get different stuff into it that way. So, I guess there you go. Maybe those.
That's your five. Yeah. Now you just need the professor to build you a full court basketball court like he did for the Harlem Globetrotters when they landed on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Let's talk a little bit about what, you know, you kind of referred to it with your offensive philosophy. You like doing stuff with screening, coming off screens, filling spots like that. Let's talk a little defense here, Matt. Let's talk, you know, what do you, now again, you have to adapt to your personnel, but, you know, perfect world, what are some things that are really integral to your defensive philosophy, and what do you like to do? How do you like to implement your half-court defenses? Are you a pressure guy? Just kind of take us through the Matt Thomas playbook here on the defensive end.
I started out as a defensive guy. Man, I forgot my first job, Marty. We're going to get out. We're going to deny passing lanes. We're Coach K. I'm watching his videos. You know, we got an elbow in the passing lane, and we're going to deny everybody. And this, I was at a small school in Iowa, and I soon found out I didn't have very quick kids.
you didn't have Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill out there denying the wing?
No, I didn't have anybody on the backside defending it either. You know, I didn't have anybody on the backside at the rim. And so I thought, man, like we got to start doing something different. And so, okay, you start checking around, and then it's, I got to Dick Bennett and, you know, and pack line stuff. And hey, we're always going to clog it, force him to make the next pass, you know, force him to kick it out, throw it around the perimeter. And so we started doing a lot more of that, had a lot more success with it. So that's why I kind of like, I'm a pack line guy. Like, I keep him out of the paint, man. Like, we, you know, we talked about, I think, whoever did the defensive clinic, I forget who I was in with defensive clinic there, they were calling it the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, so they were calling it the kitchen in the lane and the porch. We call it the house. You know, we can't let people in our house. You know, like you don't just let strangers walk in the front door. You know, you're calling the cops. It's red alert. It's whatever you want to, whatever permits you want to use. I started doing pack line. I felt it was good to teach. Easy for kids to understand. Like, nope, we're trying to force it around the next, you know, force the next pass around the perimeter. They throw it east and west around the perimeter. they're never going to hurt us.
Yeah.
Right? They dribble attack that sucker. We got to take away gaps, but they get that thing in the middle of the lane. We're going to be in trouble. You know, now it's red alert. It's all hands on deck and, you know, call the cops, whatever it is, because they're in there trying to steal your stereo or trying to steal your, that's, you know, I age myself now. I always tell the kids, like, they're trying to steal your stereo. And I'm like, you're what, coach? What are you talking about? Okay, your game, your
Xbox. There we go.
Yeah, they're trying to steal that, you know. So you got to, so I'm a big pack line guy. That's just, I guess, kind of where I landed and kind of stayed for the most part, just, you know, really pressure. And then, you know, Tony Bennett was playing it there. And when they won the title at Virginia. And so just watching him and watching their teams and how it adapted and how it had changed over a few years, how different stuff he had done than his dad had done. Then again, just, you know, talking to Jim and Jim Boone, just different stuff that he does, just stuff from him. And so that's just kind of where I developed it and tried it. But yeah, we're more pack lined. We play a lot against, you know, the last few years I've been assistant, we played a lot against Kansas City schools, you know, a lot of just kids that were faster than us. And so that was just, you know, different philosophies, stuff like that. But over there we did, we were lock left. And Chris was really trying to lock left. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, especially with high school kids. How many kids are going to hurt you going left consistently? Yeah. So we'll see. We may revert back a little bit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Got to see how the season plays out.
Yeah.
You know, this year, and we'll see kind of how our kids react. But I think the other thing that you'd asked earlier, like from an assistant coach standpoint, you know, things that you learned. That was kind of another thing. We threw some boxing one and triangle and two of people that they weren't ready for, you know, like, and all of a sudden we come out of a timeout and go boxing one on this kid. Well, they've come out and they're trying to get into a set. So trying to just do some funny stuff like that, I guess, more so than I ever have.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to disrupt flow of stuff. Then, you know, I thought that was some good stuff. It won us a couple games where we came out late and we came out of a timeout with 3 minutes to go and we go boxing one or triangle and two. And we're not letting the kid catch it that wants to catch it because they've just called a set out of the, you know, coming out of the timeout. They've called a set and they want this kid to touch it. And we're completely denying him all of a sudden, not letting him catch it. And that's created some turnover, you know, that creates some turnovers for us. So it was good to, stuff like that was just good. Just playing, I guess, and for, you know, doing more stuff like that this year, trying to win games that way, you know, trying to throw something in front of people and something that they're not ready for. I mean, how many times do you practice against a triangle and two? You know, how many times do you work on that in practice?
Yeah. No, you don't, you know, unless it's something you've seen on film and, you know, Highland runs triangle and two 30% of the time. So we've got to have something, you know, or whatever.
Right.
But
right. Right.
You know,
and we've only ever done it, you know, you only ever practice it a few times because you know that you got some personnel
mm-hmm.
that you're probably going to see it at some point in time.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't ever practice a lot, but a few times we'll do it. A few times I have, but I was like, you know, that's kind of, it's probably smarter, you know, and I think, was it Huey Brown that came out with like some videos on how to triangle and two people or box and one of them. And
yeah,
I'd always play that or whatever, you know, and that was, so I don't know, yeah. just a little more stuff like that this year. We'll be primarily pack line stuff.
But I think you bring up a good point though, Matt, where the average high school game is probably going to be somewhere between 60 and 70 possessions that you're going to be on defense. So let's just use a simple number, 60. 40-ish are going to be in pure transition off of a miss, off of a make, off of a live ball turnover, whatever it may be. So you really don't have a ton of control as a coach on 2/3 of the possessions of the game. But what you can control is coming out of a timeout and running that triangle and two and winning that possession. Okay, there's 2 points that they thought that they were going to get that we've taken away. Now we've cut down our margin of error to you know, it's 2 points less, or this is how we're going to defend the out of bounds plays. And now we've cut that off, you know, so those in my mind, as I'm hearing you talk, that's where my mind goes when you start thinking about that stuff. Now, how do you affect the other 40 possessions? Hey, we're not going to let them in our house. We're going to make them shoot off the bounce, going to their left. We're not going to give up any layups. We're not going to give up any catch and shoots. And if you can do that on defense, man, that's a huge advantage for you as well, because you are taking away, in theory, the shots that the kids are going to be comfortable with. So it all strings together.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about how many times they'll come down and somebody will call a play, and maybe you even know it. You know, you've scouted enough times, you know what that set is. They're going to run it for number 23. You know, he's coming off whatever, shag or something like that. Well, no, all of a sudden just switch it. Instead of, and maybe instead of always having to know stuff, just switch up. Like, hey, you hear them call something, jump into like a triangle two right away. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've thought beforehand who the two guys are you're going to jump, but see how they deal with it. You know, that was kind of, I don't know, just different stuff like that I've thought about now.
Mm-hmm.
Been assistant for 4 years, now coming back. Just different stuff like that that I've thought about. Like, why didn't I do that sooner? Why didn't I do that before? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's figure out different ways to do this. You know, let's figure out different ways to try and win games. Like you said, steal some possessions here and there, force a turnover, force a bad shot, whatever it is. Like, let's try and figure out some different ways to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what you do. That's how you try to take a team who has not had a lot of success. And you were talking in earlier in the pod about discipline, about habits, about accountability with, let's make these X's and O's adjustments. And that's how you start stacking good days and wins together, is just by those details right there, you know?
Yep.
So, Matt, let's bring it home on this. Let's talk a little bit about how you set up your practices. What if I were to go down to Highland here sometime this winter, which I'm just going to be honest, Matt, that's probably not going to happen. But if I'm walking into the gym in December or January or whatever, what's a typical Matt Thomas practice look like?
I would try and break it down, like time-wise, what things we want to get accomplished. So let's say a 2 hour practice. Our first 20 to 30 minutes are going to be, some sort of individual skill development, sort of stuff, right? Like, there's a little bit of warm up. Like, we always start, I shouldn't say always, but we start a lot. I call them three lines. It's just basically passing and running, catching on the run, being able to bounce it. You know, that's still skill development in my mind. That we're doing different stuff like that. So we're going to spend 20 or 30 minutes doing that. I always get somewhere where I go 30 minutes of offense, 30 minutes of defense, right? Theoretically, you're always working on the same thing, but the emphasis is on that 30 minutes defensively is, you know, the emphasis on whatever, getting them middle or taking away baseline or rotating to help, whatever it is. There's an hour and a half right there. We're always going to shoot somewhere in there. Like I said, I always remember as a young coach, Huey Brown said, you got to have 10 to 12 minute shooting segment. And so we'll do some sort of shooting stuff right there. It take 10 to 12 minutes somewhere. We'll do all our shooting stuff. And then that gives me 20 to 30 minutes of the special situation stuff. Press break, you know, whatever it is, the if you want to run special situations at the end, working on our sets, working on, you know, whatever blob, you know, baseline out of bounds stuff or sideline out of bounds stuff. So that's where I kind of, yeah. And then you've got probably in there, we that's where we do probably most of our up and down stuff. You know, the majority of it in that last 20 to 30 minutes, somewhere in there, we'll spend doing that. And then just, I always try, and it doesn't always happen. You know, this, I try and do it by the clock. Like I try, you know, I'll put 8 minutes. Okay. Yeah. So we're going from 3 o'clock to 3:08.
Yep.
And I got to make sure my assistants are always setting the clock. Like, you got to set the clock. Cause if you don't, I'm going to take that 8 minute drill I'm going to run that thing into the ground because I don't like the way it's going, and I don't like what we're doing. I don't like what we're getting out of it. And I learned, and whoever it was years ago just said, stop doing that. If it sucks, get out of the drill, right? Like don't get mad and quit beating the thing in the ground. If it sucks, get out of the drill, end it when the time's over, get out of it early, and just, hey, we're coming back to it tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, have a conversation. Why was this so bad today? Was it effort level? Was it this? Was it whatever? We're coming back to this tomorrow. I expect it to be better.
Yeah.
You know, and whoever it was, I couldn't even tell you now. I remember them saying that, like, just get out of it. Quit beating your head against the wall. Quit making it miserable. Just get out of it. Come back to it. Make it better. And now, the other side of that coin is when you always put something brand new, it's always going to look ugly, right? So
yeah.
There's that. You got to get through some of that ugliness,
yeah,
and whatever else first, and then move.
That's the art of coaching. There is knowing, you know, this is ugly because we're just trying to figure it out, or this is ugly because we're not concentrating and we're not working hard. You know, there's a huge difference.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's right. Like, I'm always on who are my assistant, or if I got a student, we got a student manager, whoever in there, like, but the clock's got to run. Like, you got to keep that clock going, because that clock keeps me on time. Because if I don't, I'm going to spend, you know, 5 extra minutes on this drill that we don't need to spend 5 minutes extra on. And now I'm at the end of practice and I've had to eliminate 3 things because I went 15 minutes over on something else. So, and I know some guys just said it like, hey, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. You know, it's every 10 minutes we rotate something. So I try and do it that way, just where it's, you know, I try and keep it on the clock, because there are some things, closeout drill. I don't need to spend 8 minutes on a closeout drill, right? We've already taught it. Mm-hmm. We just need to rep it. You know, hey, it takes 2 minutes. We need to get in and rep it, and you know, from that into a jump to the ball or whatever drill you do next, you know, into 3-on-3, boom, boom, boom. Like, all of that can take like 5 minutes,
yeah,
right? So I don't need to do a 10-minute segment on that. Just, hey, we're going to go 2 minutes, boom, clock, get out, let's go, let's get to the next thing.
Yep.
Let's keep moving on, let's keep building it on top of one another. So that's the way I've always tried to do it, I guess, for a long time. If you look at my notes, you know, my practice stuff, I got stuff written on it. I try and take stuff out from like my assistants so they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get in a practice, okay, we're going to do this drill. Here's what you're looking for, you know, or here's the emphasis of the drill. And then this assistant, you're looking for this. Did everybody box out? But that's the only thing you're looking for. You know, I'm looking for this and somebody else is looking at this, but you're looking, did everybody hit somebody, you know,
yeah,
shot one up, did everybody just turn and run to the rim like they're all in fifth grade and, you know, we all stand under the rim, jump up and down, or did people actually go hit, you know, hit somebody? So so I try and put like notes in there, detailed stuff like that. And I don't know about you, like, I learned this a long time ago. Again, somebody had said this, put all of your like, list all of your sets on your practice plans, like all your inbounds, you know, your out of bounds stuff, your sideline out of bounds stuff, any sets that you run, like, list those on your practice plan. And then, you know, like, we do the 3-on-3, or whenever you go up and down, you just look at it and you're like, hey, we haven't run bulls, you know, yeah, we haven't run that in, you know, in like a week.
Yep.
So you got to check that off the list of, hey, we've run this now, we reviewed it, we ran it live action, whatever it was. That was something that helped me. I don't know, maybe that helped somebody else, but that helped me out a long time ago, just because I would always forget. And then I'm in the middle of the game, I'm like, oh, hey, run bulls. We're going to run bulls.
Yeah.
And like, everybody looks at you like, bulls? When did we put that in? Yeah, we put that in on the second day of practice. Don't you remember it? You know, that's, and you know, and everybody looks at you and they're like, coach, you're an idiot. Like, we don't remember that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't put this in, you know, so that just, I don't know, that helped me out a lot. Just listing all of the sets or inbounds and whatever that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'd be out.
Yeah.
Help somebody else out too, but
yeah.
But that was always just one of those little tidbits that worked for me.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's worked for you and it's going to continue to work well for you, Coach Thomas. It's been a great morning here talking hoops with you. If folks want to know more about you, how to know more about your program, how can they find out about it?
Yeah, they can shoot me an email. If they want to shoot me an email, and then I can give phone numbers, whatever, I don't care. My email is mcomet@lewis.k12.mo.us. So they can shoot me an email. You hear guys say it all the time, Marty, like, oh man, I'll share whatever. I've stolen everything. And like, that's me. I tell everyone of my assistants that, like, man, I don't care. Take whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right. Take whatever you want, use whatever you want. I'll give you anything you want. So many people have given it to me. In the game of basketball, we got back from Stowe Valley and two or three different guys had emailed stuff we had talked about.
Yep.
You know, at camp and
yep.
Like, hey, here was this thing that we talked about at camp or whatever it was. And you know, say, well, Don Meyer, you get all the good stuff, but you can't use all the good stuff, yeah. Right? So you're always trying to learn and take a little something from here or there. So like, yeah, I don't care, man. I'll give them whatever, share with them whatever. So I guess I'm at that age now, Marty, where it's in the guy looking back and going, maybe I can help a young guy somewhere.
Yep.
You know, I guess I've tried to come to grips with that I'm not the young guy anymore. I'm the elder statesman, I guess, maybe.
Seasoned and experienced, and you can bust it. You can bust out one of those Don Meyer VHSs and help him out.
They wouldn't know what to do. What is that? what are you watching? What's a VHS?
What is this big black block of whatever this is? I don't get this, you know. So
we talk about it all the time. Wasn't that great? Like, you know, you're filming games.
Yeah.
Back when I started, you know, and you'd go buy VHS tapes, but you bought like the 6-hour ones because you could fit three games.
Exactly. Yes.
So we did it. And then, boy, there wasn't huddle to just, you know, hey, Marty, can I have your Omaha Central whatever film? You know, and you click a button and send it to me.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, Marty, I need some film. Can I meet you on Saturday morning?
Yes.
You're like, yeah, I'll bring whatever tape. And then you hope that they brought the right film.
Yep.
To you, you know, you had the VHS and you hope they brought the right film to you and it wasn't the year before or something. And you'd drive an hour and you'd meet somebody and swap some film. And those were the good days, man.
Those were the days, and you'd get on your rotary phone and it would take you longer to dial it than actually have the conversation, as you said earlier. So, yes, Gen X in the house. Absolutely. 1000%. So, great. Yeah. Great stuff this morning, Matt. Hope you enjoyed your first time on a pen and a napkin.
Yeah, I did. Fantastic. Absolutely. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, I appreciate you. Appreciate you kind of getting to drill down and get to know you a little bit more. Really enjoyed hanging out with Natalie it's just been good here. So really appreciate it. Give me a couple minutes here to get everything signed off and hold the line here just a second. Again, Matt Thomas, head boys basketball coach, Highland High School in Missouri, Snow Valley guy, Missouri Basketball Coaches Association board member. A lot of really good stuff here, and it's a pleasure to have Coach Thomas on the pod. Again, if you're in the Omaha area, check out Cosac Chiropractic. Thanks for them for being our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, subscribe, do all those fun things. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Again, for Matt Thomas, it's been a great morning. Really enjoyed it. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.